भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 18, where Balaram slays the demon Kalamba, text 27. Rikshatad vapuralam ambare charat Pradipti dritru kuti tatogradam strakam Svalachtikam kataka kalita kundala Twishad bhutam mahaladar ishar atrasat Narikshatad vapura lamambare charat Pradipta drig brukuti tatogradangstrakam Jvalachtikam kataka kirita kundala Tvishad bhutam haladar ishad atrasat Nirikshatad vapura lamambare charat Pradipta drig brukuti tatogradangstrakam Jvalachtikam kataka karita kundala Tvishad bhutam haladara isha atrasat Ladies? That's a tough verse. Word for word, Niriksha, seen. Tat, of Pralambasura. Vapu, the body. Alam, quickly. Ambare, in the sky. Charat, moving. Pradipta, blazing. Drik, his eyes. Brukuti, of his frown upon his eyebrows. Tata, on the edge. Ugra, terrible. Dungstrakam, his teeth. Jvalat, fiery. Shikam, hair. Kataka, of his armlets. Kirita, crown, kundala, and earrings, dvisha, by the effulgence, of adbhutam, astonishing, haladara, Lord Balaram, the carrier of the plow weapon, ishat, a little, atrasat, became frightened. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Balaram, who carries the plow weapon, saw the gigantic body of the demon as he moves swiftly in the sky, with his blazing eyes, fiery hair, terrible teeth reaching towards his scowling brows, and an amazing effulgence generated by his armlets, crown, and earrings, the Lord seemed to become a little frightened. Seemed. Purport. Srila Sanatan Goswami explains Lord Baladev's so-called fear as follows. Balaram was playfully acting out the role of an ordinary coward boy, and to maintain the mood of his pastime, he appeared slightly disturbed by the horrible demoniac body. Also because the demon had appeared as a coward boyfriend of Krishna's, and because Krishna had accepted him as a friend, Baladev was slightly apprehensive about killing him. Balaram could also have been worried that since this coward boy was actually a demon in disguise, at that very moment another such demon might have been attacking Lord Krishna himself. Thus, the omniscient and omnipotent Supreme Lord Balaram exhibited the pastime of becoming slightly nervous in the presence of the horrible demon Pralamba. Om Agyana Tavrandasya Ganajana Salakaya Chakshurnu Tamena Chasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Turubhishtra Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishabhyo Namo Namaha. So we know that Lord Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, equal in all respects to Lord Krishna. He is also considered to be the reservoir of all strength and all power. We know Lord Balaram is maintaining the entire universe upon his heads in his form of Shesha. By his mere desire, he frightened the river Yamuna into having to change her course and come to him. So in so many ways, and we see that Balaram has killed so many terrible, powerful demons. So the question is, why would he appear to be a little bit frightened by this Pralambasura demon? And of course, we can understand that this is a particular pastime of the Lord, that he exhibits a little bit of nervousness or fearfulness in the situation. And this is explained to us in the purport by Srila Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami explains that he didn't want to disturb the mood of the pastime. They're playing as coward boys, and of course, naturally, the coward boys would be frightened by this huge, horrible demon or Pralambasura. So Balaram was playing in that mood as one of the coward boys, and to sort of maintain that mood, you know, exhibit a little bit of fear or a little bit of anxiety, as the coward boys would. It's also described that he may not have wanted to kill Pralambasura right away because Krishna had accepted him into their play group and has accepted him as a friend. So therefore, a little bit of reluctance to maybe kill this, even though this is a demon, still, he was accepted as a friend of Krishna's. And finally, it's explained that he may have also been worried that if this one demon had come, then there may be other demons disguised as coward boys, and they might be attacking Krishna. And so his concern for Krishna, more than himself even, brought about a little fearfulness. Now, of course, we can see that this is all a pastime of Balaram's, pastime of Lord Krishna's. They are enjoying this rasa as coward boys. This is one of Krishna and Balaram's great sources of pleasure, that they play with the coward boys in the pasturing grounds of Vrindavan, herding the cows and the calves, and also occasionally killing demons. In fact, apparently it was more than occasionally, almost daily. These we hear of some of the demons, but apparently there were many, many demons, and every day or so there would be some demon pastime that would occur. And of course, these pastimes are unlimited. So Balaram is enjoying this pastime, and Krishna and Balaram are obviously aware of the situation, but at the same time, they stay in the mood of that pastime. It's either in this or the next purport, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that Actually, then Krishna gave Balaram the awareness that you are actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You don't have to worry about this Prahlambasura. You know? So, in other words, what's interesting there is, on one hand, of course, Krishna and Balaram fully know who they are and know their power, but at the same time, they become absorbed in the mood of the pastime. So sometimes they have to remind each other, well, you know, actually, you know, this Prahlambasura is no problem. You can take him and with no trouble whatsoever. Oh, okay. I'll kill him. So, it's interesting that while, in one sense, we often talk about these pastimes being pastimes or part of the rasa or part of the pleasure of Krishna, at the same time they're very deeply absorbed in them and taking great pleasure in these pastimes. So, we know that there is great spiritual emotion that is there in the spiritual world, just as we see such a range of emotion in this material world. It is here in the material world because it is originally there in the spiritual world. And Krishna and Balaram are the source of that emotion. So all the different emotions such as fear that we see experienced have to have... Get some water. Thank you. So all the range of emotions that we experience have their counterpart, their original counterpart, in the spiritual world. And thus what we see in the material world is reflections of those different emotions. So while the Supreme Personality of Godhead is orchestrating all of this, he is still the Supreme Person. It is not happening by some impersonal force or energy or light, but it's happening because of the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, Krishna and Balaram are also experiencing all of these emotions, feelings, relationships, and rasas, but in their pure form. Thank you, Prabhu. So in the pure spiritual form, we are seeing all of these emotions and relationships. Now, of course, these are ones that we can also experience in the material world, so we have a little bit of understanding of how these might work. Just like the Nectar Devotion describes so many relationships, rasas, and emotional exchanges. In fact, the entire book that Rupa Goswami wrote of Bhakti Visarmita Sindhu is all discussing spiritual relationship. This is our nature. This is the foundation of spiritual life, is understanding our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we understand that there's these five principal rasas that are there of neutrality, friendship, the Vatsalya rasa, of parenthood, the Madhurya rasa, and servitorship, Dasya rasa. But there are also these seven indirect ecstasies that are also there, are these bhavas or these emotions. This word bhava is often used as emotion. We think of it being ecstasy, but many, many times if you look under the word emotion, the word that Prabhupada translates bhava as emotion many, many times. So any strong feeling, emotion, of course, a spiritual ecstasy is called bhava. So we have these seven secondary emotional ecstasies that are there. Does anyone remember the seven? Quick quiz. I had to look them up. What are the seven indirect rasas?
Laughter.
What?
Laughter.
Anger.
Anger.
What was it?
Ghastliness.
Ghastliness, yes, ghastliness. I always remember that one.
Affection. Mercy.
Compassion, yeah. Oh, yeah, compassion probably. Okay, pretty good. Any others? We've got laughing, astonishment, chivalry, compassion, anger, dread, and ghastliness. So, in other words, all of this range of emotions, all the way from compassion to dread and ghastliness and anger, are all there in the spiritual world. Now, it's interesting, in, I forget, somewhere in some later chapter of Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada mentions that these aren't always all exhibited in the spiritual world, but they are exhibited very much in when Krishna comes into the material world in Gokula. So we see this whole range of relations, just like we don't see demons in the spiritual world in Goloka, but in Gokula there are actual demons. So we may not always have all of these different relationships, but in the but they are here when Krishna performs his pastimes on earth. So, of course, he is the basis for all of these relationships. And so he becomes very absorbed in enacting these pastimes so that he can enjoy these rasas and emotions and relationships with his devotees. I was thinking one way to understand this is if you're looking, watching a movie or a play, Krishna's like the producer and the director, right? The producer's the one who gets all the money together and puts the, you know, puts the thing on, and he hires everyone. So Krishna has all the ingredients, all the energies come from Krishna. So he's the producer of everything. And then the director is the one who actually keeps everything running. And so Krishna, of course, he works through many agencies and many energies, but ultimately Krishna is the director of everything. So in these pastimes, he's the producer and the director, but he's also an actor, right? And you know, I've heard, I don't have any experience about this, but sometimes people say, sometimes actors want to be a director, and closer. So sometimes you see someone directed and acted by such and such, and I've heard that this is very difficult. It's very difficult to direct yourself in a part. But Krishna does all of this. He's the director, he's the producer, but he's also an actor. So in the sense, he has to become very absorbed. He's not just sitting back aloofly watching these pastimes. He's absorbed in them. Now, sometimes I've heard that actors, if they're playing a very difficult part or some historical personality, sometimes they'll really get into that part. There's a name for it. I don't know what it is. Some type of acting. But, you know, I've heard that sometimes they'll, like, talk like that person in all their whole life, not just when they're on the set filming, but, you know, like they'll go around and talk and they'll be in character all the time so they can become fully absorbed, so they actually almost think they are that person. So Krishna's kind of like that. You know, as the perfect actor, he's the perfect everything. He's also the perfect actor, so he's totally absorbed. You know, when he's playing as a cowboy, he's not sitting back just thinking, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but this might be fun to do this. No, he is enjoying. He's experiencing the full range of emotional involvement in that part, in that rasa or pastime, playing as a cowboy or playing dancing with the gopis or with Mother Yashoda or whatever the particular relationship is. And, of course, he's also so amazing that he can maintain all of these different roles and relationships simultaneously. He can act in as a cowherd boy when his relationship with his cowherd boys. Then he can go home and be in his relationship with Nanda and Yashoda. And at night, he can sneak out and be in his relationship with the gopis in the Madhurya Rasa. So a very, very, what do we call that when an actor is very, has a wide repertoire, you know, great range of parts that he can play. Of course, to be able to maintain the part of as the actor and really be totally absorbed, sometimes Krishna doesn't even really want to know how it's all working. So sometimes he lets, isn't it Purnamasi, who's a yoga maya? He lets her be the director sometimes. You figure this out and you work this out, and I'll see how you arrange this and how this particular pastime is going to come out. Of course, ultimately he's in control, but at the same time, part of the enjoyment is to not be in control. So Krishna gives up his control to Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj. He plays their young son. We saw how he lets the coward boys defeat him. And he has to put, who was it, Sridham? Was it Sridham? So, well, anyway, one of the coward boys on his shoulders. You know, so this is part of the wonderful nature of Krishna. Talk about being secure. You know, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but yet he can let himself be defeated by a little coward boy and carry them on his shoulders, because that's his fun. That's his enjoyment. So these relationships are the basis of all of human interaction. Sometimes we can understand how Krishna enjoys these relationships because we understand how we enjoy them in the material world. But we have to remember, he is not imitating the material activity, material world and relationships. We are imitating the relationships of the spiritual world because they are absolute. They are there eternally. They are there originally. They are the pure and perfect relationships of which those we experience in the material world are merely reflections of those relationships. And unfortunately, because they are in the material world, those relationships are imperfect. They don't have the perfection as exhibited in Goloka Vrindavan. Prabhupada explained this nicely in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 156 in the purport. He said, we should understand that the Supreme Lord exists everywhere in his transcendental spiritual nature, and that the living entity's relationship with the Lord are directly and indirectly existing everywhere, even in this material world. In the spiritual world, there are five kinds of relationships with the Supreme Lord: Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. The perverted relationships of these rasas are found in the material world. Land, home, furniture, and other inert material objects are related in Shanta, or the neutral or silent sense. So he's talking about how this applies to the material world, and our neutral relationship are those objects that we accumulate around us that we actually have some relationship with, right? Sometimes we're very, very attached to our homes, our cars, our land, our, you know, our material things, which actually are inert. Whereas servant's work is in the dasya relationship. The reciprocation between friends is called sakya. The affection of a parent for a child is known as vatsalya. And the affairs of conjugal love constitute madhurya. These five relationships in the material world are distorted reflections of the original pure sentiments, which should be understood and perfected in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. In the material world, the perverted rasas bring frustration. If these rasas are reestablished with Lord Krishna, the result is eternal blissful life. So, among the many reasons we read Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the reasons is that it gives us an awakening, a taste of what our real life is, that these relationships are available to us in their perfect form, and that this is our eternal nature of which we should be striving for, to be going back home, back to Godhead. So these are what are real, spiritual relationships. Spiritual relationships between a living entity and Krishna, and spiritual relationships between the living entities in their pure form. So as devotees, for those of us who are aspiring to be devotees, to perform devotional service even within this material world, we are also striving to develop these spiritual relationships. And in fact, that is one of the essences of what we do in this Krishna conscious movement. We are not only simply doing a process of yoga, a process of purification, but that process leads to a result. And the result is the increased development of our love for Krishna. And love means relationship. So we have a relationship with Krishna, and we also have a relationship with all of Krishna's part and parcels. So as we love Krishna, as the Supreme Father, we naturally are going to love all of his sons and daughters in the same way. So our devotee relationships, in essence, are spiritual. But they are sometimes may appear material, but they are material to the degree that they are influenced by our own material desires. How do we change these relationships from material to spiritual? By putting Krishna in the center. When Krishna becomes the center of a relationship, that relationship is automatically spiritualized. Now, of course, we may not experience this immediately all the time in all relationships. We're still in sort of that mixed process or period of becoming purified, becoming Krishna conscious. But still, we begin to experience spiritual relationships through devotional service. If we have the common purpose of devotional service, then everything becomes spiritual around us and everything becomes Krishna conscious. So because we are part of Krishna's family and our lives are centered around Krishna, there's naturally going to be affection between devotees. This is natural. This is normal and desirable. We want to have affectionate relationships with the devotees. Of course, we want to be a very spiritual, loving family. We don't want to be a dysfunctional family. That can happen also. But to the degree that it does, it means that we're still acting on the material platform, and we have some purification yet to do before we can fully appreciate one another and act towards one another in a spiritual way. And when we do so, when we act affectionately, when we act cooperatively, this is very, very pleasing to the spiritual master and very, very pleasing to Lord Krishna. Of course, a well-known verse from the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this principle is explained by Krishna himself in the story of the Prachetas. This verse is, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, 'My dear sons of the king, I'm very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I'm so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. So because they were working together so nicely and cooperatively in devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead became very, very pleased, and he appreciated the friendship and the friendly relationships among them. He didn't say, somehow or another, you just tolerate one another, you work side by side, and just do your service. No, it was, again, relationship and rasa is essential in spiritual life. So that friendly relationship amongst devotees is actually not only encouraged, but very much appreciated by Krishna. In Srila Prabhupada's purport, he says, since the sons of King Prachinabharishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachinabharishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. This unity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. So Prabhupada is saying that our cause of disunity, even in the society of devotees, is because of our leaning towards material things, our material desires. That is the things that keep us apart, those material desires. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, here's the other part of it, though. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There's only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is a disagreement over service, such disagreement is taken as spiritual. Now, that's an interesting distinction, because in other words, and Prabhupada said that even in the spiritual world, there may sometimes be differences on how to serve Krishna. I want to serve Krishna in this way. You may want to serve Krishna in this way. But the thing that unites us is that we both want to serve Krishna. Now, if you want to serve Krishna and I want to serve myself and I want power, distinction, money, whatever, then that's material. You see the difference? If our material desire is our cause of disunity, our cause of differences, that's Maya. That's just Maya interfering, keeping us apart so that we're not serving nicely and spreading Krishna consciousness. But sometimes there might be some disagreement over how to best serve. But, you know, those disagreements can usually be worked out, you know, because the goal is the same. Because the goal is there that we want to serve Krishna, then we can figure out how we can serve Krishna together, or we can at least serve Krishna side by side, you know, in mutually important ways. So this is what we try to do in the societies of devotees. We try to become united in our love for Srila Prabhupada, in our love for Krishna, in devotional service to the Supreme. And therefore, we want to work together in harmony and develop these type of friendships, as the Prachetas did, and thus please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, to accomplish these goals, Srila Prabhupada created this International Society of Krishna Consciousness. The ISKCON Society had two broad purposes. If you look at the seven purposes of ISKCON that Srila Prabhupada created when he incorporated in 1966, there's seven, but they basically fall into two categories. One was a place for devotees to associate and to spiritually advance together, and the other was as a preaching missionary organization. So we need to have a place for devotees to come together. We need to provide for the spiritual needs of devotees, and we need to be able to advance in Krishna consciousness through sadhu sangha, through the association together, in enlivening one another and encouraging one another in Krishna consciousness. Then we need to take our own enlivenment and our own advancement, whatever degree that is, in Krishna consciousness, and also give that to others. Because that was the idea that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted, this preaching of the Hare Krishna mantra, spreading of devotional service and Krishna consciousness to every town and village. And Srila Prabhupada came to America with that purpose, with that single-minded purpose of giving Krishna consciousness to all living entities and every town and village. Now, for either of these purposes to succeed, they both need to be there. For us to be able to preach Krishna consciousness and spread Krishna consciousness to the world, we have to have favorable association devotees. We have to have the Sadhu Sangha, which is going to give us the spiritual enlivenment and give us the spiritual strength to be able to go out and to preach and to give Krishna consciousness to others. And at the same time, in doing so, we actually are able to work very closely together. In other words, if we keep that common purpose, if we're united on that goal of how we can give Krishna consciousness to others, then we naturally are going to come together and cooperate to work towards that goal. Sometimes, you know, when some devotees are extremely critical, and particularly when they seem to be able to spend an awful lot of time and, you know, seem to have hours on the internet, you know, to be able to criticize others, and you sometimes wonder, don't they have enough devotional service to do, you know, or they need some activity, some engagement, you know. It's true, because if you know, when we're working hard to spread Krishna consciousness, to serve Krishna in whatever way we're doing, whatever service we're doing, there's just not a lot of time for that. But yet, rather, we want to use our time with devotees constructively. We want to use our time in such a way that we develop these loving relationships, that we feel united, that we take strength and support from one another, so that we become more fixed and enlivened in Krishna consciousness. And as we become stronger in Krishna consciousness, then we naturally are able to give Krishna consciousness to others. So these two things work very nicely together. And Srila Prabhupada, in his great expertise, organized our ISKCON society perfectly to accomplish the goal of bringing its members together to become Krishna conscious, and then to be able to take that Krishna consciousness out to the world and make others Krishna conscious. Right. And that's what we can learn about the story of Balaram and Pulambasura. Well, it was a little bit of a stretch there. But but we were talking about relationship. We were talking about rasa, and we were talking about how these spiritual relationships are there fully manifested in Goloka Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan, you know, by Krishna and Balaram. And we should take that same spirit of spiritual relationships into our own lives and our own society. Okay. So I'll end at that point. Are there any other comments or questions? Mahamaya Mataji.
Hare Krishna. So you're giving us the example of the film set, the movie set. Mm-hmm. And since my son has the ambition of becoming the director of photography for mm-hmm. movies, I was just wondering about that position. You were mentioning the other important people on the set. So who's the director of photography?
Director of photography? I don't know. Well, Krishna seems to have most of the parts, either directly or indirectly, or, you know, most of the support systems. So the director of photography, what does he do? He sort of sets the scene and figures out how to...
He works with the director to execute what the director wants to be on the film. So he's in charge of the cameras, he's in charge of the sets. Maybe even the costumes, I'm not sure about that.
Maybe that's what Yogamaya does. Maybe that's part of her, like, you know, kind of like setting it all up, making the whole, making it all work, you know. Not sure. Yes, Dharmaraj.
Just playing the role of the devil's advocate, you were talking about devotees or so being on the internet criticizing. On one hand, sometimes it can be, at least for me, I see that it can be beneficial whenever you have someone to say something negative, because it keeps you on guard of how not to act. And so sometimes in a society like where we are here, this community being like so large, we seem to have a lot of that, and it gives us the bad side and the good side, and teach us not to do things on the bad side and to follow examples on the good side. So Can you comment on that?
I would say that that is a very, very nice Vaishnava attitude, because you're seeing how to take something positive out of every situation. In fact, in our scriptures, we often get positive examples and negative examples. Now, that's very commonly done, so that's there. Even in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, the 1.1.11, where the description of devotional service, Anyabhilashita Shunya verse, it's first, Rupa Goswami says what devotional service isn't. Yeah, it's first the negative. He says, it's not karma, it's not jnana, etc. Then he says what it is, positive, loving devotional service to Krishna. So, sometimes it's good to see the positive and the negative examples if we take them that way and we don't become overly influenced by them. That's our danger, is that sometimes we become influenced by negativity and criticism and things like that. And I would say that would be the concern. Yeah, I'll take first, Madam Mohan.
In the example that you were using about the director and that, I was thinking of how Krishna, he has to trust you to turn himself over to be under your control.
Yeah.
And because he says, I can give somebody jnana, that's not difficult. I can give somebody the results of these different benedictions, but in devotional service, he gives himself to you. So I thought your explanation of that was so nice, because you could see that he puts himself literally under your direction. He gives himself to you because he trusts you that it'll be done. So that's an aspect of how bhakti isn't given to everyone, because Krishna is purchased by that.
That's a real important point, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Do you remember the verse where it says where Krishna does not so easily award bhakti because he becomes purchased by the devotee? Do you know it?
In Chaitanya Charitamrita,
you know the verse?
In Haridas Thakur Antalila also, it says Krishna easily gives the sense enjoyment, bhukti mukti.
Yeah.
And kobunaden bhakti lukaya. He hides bhakti. He does not reveal, give to the devotees. But he easily gives liberation and book.
Right. Okay.
Twice mentioned, actually.
You also wanted a question or comment?
Yeah, I was very interesting. I was just recently reading, Mother Lakshmimuni sent me the email of seven purpose. But did you pick up these two out of seven? I was very nicely put it, if I can, please correct me if I understood what he said. That Prabhupada established this ISKCON for making a center where all the devotee comes, and through their spiritual discourse and practice, they fulfill their inner nourishment to further progress, and they are being satisfied spiritually. Simultaneously, there is another purpose of ISKCON, to go out and distribute the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that you came up with?
Well, that was my understanding when I looked at those seven purposes, that they really, those are the two categories. Which is interesting, because in our strategic planning, we have this very, simple mission statement, more devotees and happier devotees, So that's what Prabhupada wanted, was, make the devotees happy coming together and make more devotees by preaching.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Premanita Gaur.
Yeah, I was contemplation the other day. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that as soon you think you're a devotee, you fall down, you're fallen.
As soon as you what?
As soon you think you're a devotee, you're fallen.
You'll fall down.
So I think that devotee term is being but maybe we should call each other bhakti yoga practitioners.
Aspiring devotees.
Because one of the worst things that we can do is offend a devotee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we do that all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, at least myself. But the devotee term, is like we're not supposed to do offenses to a devotee. And sometimes we go, the devotees, and we do like offenses in wholesale, not retail.
Mm-hmm.
So... Can you comment something in that about
that? So trying to figure out a way how we can, not have the reaction to offend any devotees so much, turn them to something else. Well, one thing I was just thinking when you were saying that, though, in the Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur, he explains the whole process of offenses and how to, you know, how to rectify offenses. But he says a really important thing. He says in there, I don't know if I've seen this exactly other places, but I know it's there. He says, don't think that this means that if a person is not an advanced devotee, this doesn't apply and I can go ahead and offend them. He makes a very clear point that this means all devotees, you know, all classes, you know, anyone who is a legitimate devotee chanting Hare Krishna, worshiping Krishna. You know, so we're careful not to defend, not to offend any devotees, whether they're advanced devotees or not so advanced devotees. And of course, also, you know, we learn from Nectar of Instruction how we relate to different classes of devotees, whether they're more advanced, less advanced. And in none of those cases do we offend or degrade or dismiss a devotee. If a devotee is in a lesser stage, then we try to offer compassion to them and try to help them. And help them to bring him forward in Krishna consciousness. It's a difficult thing, though. We all do it. I'm sure I commit offenses daily, if not hourly, you know, to devotees. But we still, it's so important that we need to really try to work on it. Okay, a couple of quick things here, everyone here, and then we'll go to the back, over to the ladies.
So since we commit offenses every day, I think that sometimes...
Well, most of you probably don't. I do.
Well, I'm... Okay. I think sometimes we get caught, our ego gets in the way of maybe forgiveness or understanding that not everyone is exactly who they should be every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that sometimes we see a person change, mm-hmm. and we acknowledge it personally, but we have a problem maybe acknowledging it, how do you say it? Publicly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we want to get... could keep ourselves stuck in that mindset and not acknowledge that the person maybe had a bad day or mm-hmm. maybe just, you know, didn't have time that day or you know, was in a bad place life.
That's a real important point. We always have to have this mood of compassion and forgiveness for ourselves and for others. Because it's true, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we're supposed to offer obeisances. Every morning we say Vanja Kalpatriya. In other words, we do offer obeisance to all the devotees. It's kind of like we ask forgiveness and we ask, you know, and the devotee is very tolerant and very willing to overlook the faults of others. In other words, we should be very careful for ourselves that we try to, you know, not commit offenses and that we be tolerant. But we're not so quick to take offense. But another devotee. That's really not so much the devotee's nature. Thank you. Very good point. In the back, we had Mantrini and... Or who? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
You were just...
Yeah. Hare Krishna. I was remembering, and I don't know where it is, but I believe it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the admonition that in the scriptures, both praising and blaming... a person are forbidden, but of the two, it's more important not to blame.
Right. Yeah, we should neither praise nor criticize, okay. But if you're going to err on one or the other, it's better to praise than criticize.
Right. And then what this Mataji was saying reminded me of an experience I had. I used to work flea markets. And so I would talk to people there, and I met this other vendor one day, and he said, I've never met a bad person. Just somebody who is having a bad day. And chances are, if you treat them right, next time you see them, they'll be having a good day.
We have to remember, you know, Srila Prabhupada said 90% of the people are innocent. You know, those who are actually really demoniac or really, you know, is a small percentage. And he said the problem is that the vast majority of people are just influenced by materialistic propaganda. You know, by the scientists, the atheists, Mayavadis, etc. So if we take that attitude that most people are innocent, they simply need to have Krishna consciousness given to them in a way that they can accept and receive it, what to speak of devotees? I mean, we have to see that, you know, devotees basically have their heart in the right places. We, you know, they're on the right path. You know, Prabhupada used to give us this example, if you're in the shower, don't criticize someone if they're dirty if they're in the shower washing. You know, so that's the idea. If we're in the process of devotional service, we're in the shower. We used to say this. I don't hear this so much anymore. We used to say it all the time because I guess we were all so new and we were really in the shower. You know, we had a lot to clean up. You know, and, well, we all still do, of course. But that is the idea. If the person is situated rightly, there may be some faults. Prabhupada said it's like a spot on the moon. It doesn't diminish, you know, the glory of the beauty of the moon. You know. But it requires a lot of tolerance, and that's one of the qualities that we need to develop. Yeah. Okay. One more. Go ahead.
I heard a long time ago, maybe it must have been in the 70s, and I'm not sure who said it. It might be one of those Prabhupada said, or I heard Prabhupada say, but it went something like, you have to be really careful on Sankirtan, because even if someone gets a book and then they become a devotee, or they even become a pure devotee, and you were offensive, you'll be held accountable just to that person that you just met. Hmm. That's not even, and I'm not sure if that's true, but
I don't remember hearing that. But yeah, it's a good warning.
Yeah. The Shastric evidence for that, the Pramana, is the story of Dhruva Maharaj when he went away before he was had his darshan, and he came back as a pure devotee. His mother, a stepmother, offended him. And in the purport there, it explained that she was accountable because later on he became a pure devotee. Hmm. So they're retroactive, you know.
Wow.
Lord Chaitanya says, offer all respects to everyone because...
Well, if it's retroactive, we know that everybody who is any kind of devotee at this point will eventually, this lifetime or next lifetime, or, you know, will become a pure devotee. So that's a very good warning. And probably that's a good note for us to end on. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.